Morning, everyone. Welcome to First Things First. I'm Jen Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. It is a beautiful Wednesday morning here in New York City. We got a big show for you today. A lot of things happened yesterday. The L. Bell era in Pittsburgh is officially over. The Cowboys have a new reason to feel encouraged, but we are going to start with the drama out west, out in Golden State. Kevin Durant and Draymond Green had their friendship tested with a heated exchange during their loss to the Clippers on Monday. So KD was upset that Draymond didn't pass him the ball at the end of regulation. Green reportedly called Durant a derogatory word. Sticks and stones. Look who was there calming him down. Boogie. The drama reportedly spilled into the locker room where Draymond brought up Durant's impending free agency. All of this resulted in Draymond Green being suspended and fined last night. Warriors beat the Hawks anyway. Here's KD after the game.
Hey, Kevin, have you and Draymond been able to hash anything out?
No.
Do you see that happening anytime soon?
I'm sure it will. We got a long season ahead.
Did he cross the line with anything last night that was said?
I'm gonna keep that in house. That's what we do here. I mean, obviously, I know you guys got a job to do, but I'm not trying to get nobody no headlines. What happened happened. We're trying to move on. I'm just trying to play basketball.
Kevin, just following up on that real quick. Were you surprised he got suspended?
I was just focused on the game. I didn't really care either way. I was just focused on trying to come out here and finish this back-to-back off.
Nick, what'd you make of everything? Did any of this surprise you?
This shocked me. I am shocked, and I can tell you a lot of people in league circles, from GMs to players to associates, are shocked that the Warriors have gone to this level to placate Kevin Durant. About 3 years ago, before Kevin Durant got to the Golden State Warriors, Draymond Green tried to fight Steve Kerr in the locker room. In the midst of a 73-win season, tried to fight the coach. He didn't get suspended for that.
And it was a private fine, wasn't it?
He got fined, he got talked to, but didn't get suspended.
Right.
The fine's nowhere near the game check he's missing out on.
Right, the fine was held privately.
That's
what they said. They didn't announce how much it was.
Exactly right. And so, but this is costing him well into the six figures. That the Draymond Green got suspended for hurting Kevin Durant's feelings. Draymond Green got suspended for using profanity towards Kevin Durant. And the only reason, the only logical path to follow is the Warriors, much like Kevin Durant is seemingly preoccupied with his free agency, are also on a management level preoccupied with his free agency and want to do everything they can to reach out to Kevin Durant and say, we got you, man. We're not going to let people be mean to you. We'll take care of that. I am surprised personally that once this had boiled over to this point, that Kevin Durant didn't go to management and say, do what you want, but don't suspend him, even if he was furious, because they don't need him against the Hawks, but it makes Durant look weak, makes Durant look bad, and it makes this a much bigger story. This was going to be a one-day story. There was a blow-up on the bench. I knew a lot of shows yesterday talked about it. I didn't think we needed to because I didn't think it was a big deal. I think in pro sports this happens. Over a long season, guys get angry. They yell at each other. They're fine the next day. Durant's clearly still upset. Draymond had Steph went to his house to try to calm him down yesterday, according to Marcus Thompson, The Athletic. But this is all about the Warriors, see, in my eyes, trying to make sure Kevin Durant knows, we need you, man. We love you. We got your back.
I think one part, too, we can't gloss over is yesterday, who went to Draymond's house?
Steph Curry.
Oh, because Steph was out of town.
Steph was not there. He was not on the bench because of the groin injury when this all happened.
Okay, so do you believe that Draymond would have done this to Steph?
No.
Okay, do you think he would have done this to Clay?
No.
Boogie Cousins just got there. You think he would have even done this to Boogie Cousins?
No. Can I add something, though?
Go ahead.
I also don't think any of those guys would have berated Draymond.
What do you consider berating?
When Kevin Durant went to the bench and was yelling, pass me the damn ball, when Durant didn't get the ball immediately, what started all this, and doesn't even go up court, and to talk down to Draymond Green, I don't think those other guys would have done it.
Wait, you just because he continues to say, pass me the ball, that's talking down to Draymond?
Well,
after we already know that Draymond turned the ball over?
Just saying pass me the ball is not talking down to him. The way it's been reported, again, Marcus Thompson's got a good blow-by-blow. Draymond felt he was talking down to him, talking to, quote, like a scrub who he could speak to like that. But I agree with you. Draymond wouldn't have called Steph, Clay, anyone on the team, except for maybe Kerr and Durant, what he called.
Well, whatever it was he said, Draymond responded with, who do you think you're talking to? It was enough where it felt like he was being condescending.
This is the thing. It wasn't just a condescending. Draymond already had a problem with KD before this happened. All right? It just boiled over, and Draymond was wrong. Typically, in a professional situation, a guy will analyze what happened. If I'm in that situation, I get the rebound. I react in natural time. They got two timeouts.
Yeah.
So part of it's Steve Kerr's fault.
Yep.
He didn't call a timeout. So we'll get to that maybe at some other point. I turn the ball over. The game goes into overtime. Now, we end up losing the game in overtime. But at that point, when I'm going back, I'm like, man, I should have made a better basketball play. Now, it might have been passing to Kevin Durant, or it might have been something else. You have to be able to fess up for what you did. In that opportunity, they did not get a chance to be able to win the game. They didn't even get a shot. So Draymond's at fault for that. KD is not at fault for saying, I want the ball in that situation. And then when they get on the bench, it continues. Both of them continue. Draymond's talking to KD. KD's saying, I wanted the ball there. To me, that is not talking down to someone. That's actually just saying what really should have happened. You got the rebound. I'm right there. You should give the ball to me and let me try to finish him off. The problem is that as an organization, you have to do something to be able to protect KD. Man, this is a workplace. You watching the game, people forget about that. That on the sideline of the NBA, that's a workplace. You can't threaten someone. You can't call someone out of their name. It wasn't like he just called him a scrub or a chump. He used that five-letter word that means a lot more. So I believe that they had to do something because it was not over with after the game. Draymond continued afterwards where he began to say, you know something, KD? I got a problem with how you're approaching free agency. So that's a different. It's not about the shot now. So it was a bigger issue already. Golden State had to intervene. You can say they were protecting KD, but as an employer, you have to be able to protect people and allow them to be able to do their job. And when Draymond continued with it, that's why he got suspended. That's why you have someone like Steph come to Draymond's house, because Draymond would not let it go.
Right.
And this will continue. This is not over with.
All right, so one thing you both touched on was the impending free agency. To both KD and to Draymond, how much of this is because, like you said, they want to protect him, but they also got Draymond's free agency coming up as
man,
well?
Man, the players, everyone in the basketball world, except for Golden State fans, seem to recognize the very real reality that this can be, this likely is, Kevin Durant's last year as a Warrior. The players know that. Where the players' frustration is that Kevin Durant has just added fuel to that fire. Kevin Durant could have taken a lot of approaches, could have taken the approach LeBron had last year, which is, I'm not addressing any questions about this at all. He could have taken the approach that Kyrie did. Now, it might have been disingenuous, which is, hey, I love it here. I want to be here long term. There's a lot of things he could have done. Instead, he took the Dwight Howard approach when Dwight Howard was in Orlando Magic, which is adding more noise to it at every turn to where it is consuming the season.
All season, not just recently.
No, it was before the season.
Right.
It was he openly talked about what it would be like to be a Knick. He talked about these things. So, like, that is clearly rubbed a lot of his teammates the wrong way.
Yeah, but he has that. He has that right. When you brought him there for the first year, like, that he has that right to be able to do that. So now all of a sudden you don't like what he's doing. And he's basically done the same thing in his first couple years.
I think that's where the annoyance comes from his teammates, see, is that last year was the is Kevin Durant going to stay with us tour. And now they're in part two of that.
Kevin Durant has a right to do what he wants to do. The reason why I didn't get upset when he left OKC and went there, because he had the right to do what he wants to do. To think that we're going to leave this conversation and think this is Kevin Durant's fault, I believe we're wrong at doing that. What did Kevin Durant do wrong besides call for the ball? From just pure basketball standpoint, we get the rebound. It's tie game. We got two timeouts. We decide we're going to get a better shot if we keep it moving. Draymond decides not to give me the basketball, turns the ball over, and I get in the huddle and say, you should have given me that ball. Tell me where Kevin Durant was wrong in this.
I'm not saying that Kevin Durant did anything wrong. What I'm trying to do is lay out for the audience why a simple on-court dispute boiled over to such levels. And and where Kevin Durant, right or wrong, he has a right to handle his free agency however he wants. And the players on that team that have won a championship without him have a right to be rubbed the wrong way by it.
Yeah,
and
all those other players were drafted by Golden State. When you decide to go outside the family and you hire a hired gun, you're at the mercy of whatever he wants to do anyway. Like, you can't convince Kevin Durant he should stay there for the rest of his career. His legacy in Golden State will never be the same as Steph, will never be the same as Draymond, will never be the same as Klay.
And I think that's where some of Draymond's frustration comes, right? Is we were great before you, and now you're talking to me in some type of way. That strikes me as what happened with Draymond.
Draymond is sensitive. All right?
Sure.
In the first season, Kevin Durant was there. If they were in the same situation, Kevin Durant would have asked for the ball. All right? Would he have been wrong in year number one? Oh, so now, because they've won a couple, so now he's wrong in doing that.
Does this affect, do you think, what management decides to do with Draymond Green, whether he wants to stay or not?
Listen, Marcus Thompson, I'm going to quote his article again because it's the most well-sourced article I've read on this, and he is a great reporter who covers this team. He put in that article that he thinks management will have discussions in light of wanting to keep Kevin Durant on about whether or not they should move Draymond Green. That would be a nuclear option. Now, Draymond Green also is going to want a contract that probably is going to make him overpaid as opposed to properly paid as he is now, which is a part of this as well. But there is the only thing that can beat the reason to me this is such a big story is the only team that can beat the Warriors is the Warriors. And Klay Thompson, who never says anything, said as much in the locker room, right? What's the quote, Jenny?
I literally just wrote it down. The only team that can beat us is us.
And he said, so let's go kick some ass. Like, that was Klay. Klay tried to defuse the situation by speaking, which is not what he normally does. But the only team that can beat him is them. And now there's a bit of a fissure. It was the same thing with those Lakers teams. The only team that could beat Shaq and Kobe were Shaq and Kobe, and they beat themselves.
All right, we'll talk more about this coming up. But on the other side, let's talk football. Can the Steelers win the Super Bowl without L. Bell? Because they will not have L. Bell. That's next on First Things First.
Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos, all commission-free. They strive to make financial services work for everyone, not just the wealthy. Robinhood is a non-intimidating way for stock market newcomers to invest for the first time with true confidence. Robinhood is simple and intuitive with a clear design that shows data presented in an easy-to-digest way. Here's why I recommend Robinhood. No commission fees. Other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade. But Robinhood doesn't charge commission fees. Trade stocks and keep all of your profits. It's simple, easy to understand charts and market data. Place a trade in just 4 taps on your smartphone. Robinhood web platform also lets you view stock collections. Collections are like sectors, like entertainment, social media, curated categories like female CEOs, and analyst ratings of buy, hold, sell for every stock. You learn by doing it. Learn how to invest as you build your portfolio. Discover new stocks and track favorite companies with personalized news feeds. Custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest. Robinhood is giving our listeners a free stock, such as Apple, Ford, or Sprint, to help build your portfolio. Sign up at first.robinhood.com. That's first.robinhood.com.
Back here, First Things First. So Fox Sports has teamed up with For the Win for the College Football Fan Index. Each week, you, the fans, will be ranking college football experiences. And this week, we're ranking best quarterbacks. Oregon came in first, followed by Alabama, Washington State, and Clemson. Nick, what are your thoughts?
My only thought is, how does Kyler Murray not make the list? I got no problem with Oregon's kid. He's probably going to be the number one pick of the draft if he comes out. Tua's going to win the Heisman. Trevor Lawrence has been great for Clemson. Will Greer at West Virginia. I get all that. But I feel like switch out Washington State, put on Oklahoma and Kyler Murray. That would be my one tweak, see?
Yeah. I mean, you got to have Kyler Murray in there. He's sensational. He got better numbers than Baker Mayfield, who won the Heisman Trophy last year. So it's a list. A good list. It should have been a list of a few more quarterbacks.
A few extra names. And I feel like Herbert, that's about his pro potential more than what he's done at Oregon this year.
All right, we'll get to L. Bell in a second. But first, Chris Paul embarrasses Nikola Jokic with some fancy dribbling right here.
Oh, he does a few of these a month. He just toys with them. He's got one of the best handles. Man. Jokic can do a lot of things on offense. And that's what he can do on defense. Get made to look like one of
those. Watch this. College basketball, Georgetown, Illinois. Mac McClung drives baseline with a nice up and under move for the reverse layup.
Below the rim. Mac stays on the highlights now.
Yeah.
Now listen, it's one of our favorites from high school. We followed him. Now he's a freshman at Georgetown. And yes, he's white. I'm going to say it. Yes, he's white and making highlights.
Usually above the rim highlights like
finally,
that.
Finally, LSU Memphis, Skylar Mays destroys Mike Parks Jr. with a vicious slam.
Oh, my goodness. That's a big time dunk now.
Yeah, they don't play too much basketball down in the Bayou, but a couple of nice plays by him last night, Skyler. This one skying up. He had a nice little reverse layup, a play after this one, too.
Oh.
Yeah, we'll watch the sequence of videos, man. I mean, come on.
Okay.
You guys have taught me that.
Check you out, see?
All right, on to the NFL now, where it became official yesterday. Le'Veon Bell will not play football in 2018. The All-Pro running back did not report to the Steelers by 4 p.m. yesterday. That was the deadline for him to play under the franchise tag. He wanted to protect his body, to go out and get a big money deal. Now we'll see if that can happen in 2019. Here's Steelers head coach Mike Tomlin.
I understand that business is an element of the game of football, and there are elements of the game, relationships within the game, football-related relationships that we all hold near and dear and understand. And then football at this level, there's also the business element. And even when we don't understand it, we're sensitive to it. So we're not shocked when things happen from a business standpoint, no. Like I've said repeatedly, and I mean, I'm focused on the guys that are here, man. We got enough challenges that are significant in terms of meeting the things that we need to meet this week in terms of getting a win.
All right, CeCe, break down where we are right now. And what the next steps are for both the Steelers and for Lev Bell.
I think the Steelers are going to move forward. Just like in any professional sports, if a guy gets injured, something happens, the team moves on. Like, players would like to think that, oh, man, the team's going to suffer. Yeah, they have one of their talented players that's not going to be there. And I believe that his history with the Pittsburgh Steelers is over with. When the coach, Mike Tomlin, tries to reach out with you multiple times, which he tried to do in L. Bell's case, and L. Bell decided that he wasn't going to respond. Mike Tomlin made that clear yesterday. He's never been involved with a player that he tried to reach out and communicate as much as he did to L. Bell and not have that player respond. We started the season with John Gruden and Khalil Mack. Oh, it was the opposite. Well, John Gruden wasn't reaching out to Khalil Mack. Now we have the opposite. Mike Tomlin wanted him there. Now, how are they going to get him signed to a long-term contract? Mike Tomlin can only have so much influence on the general manager on the organization. But I always believe, and I tell players this, you want the coaching staff speaking on your behalf. So when you cut off communication, you cut off one of the, I believe, necessary things to trying to get a deal done. Because when it comes down to it, you want someone to jump on that table and say, we need this guy here. So when L. Bell, him and his agent, decided this was the course they were going to take, I believe that they'll look back. Well, they're not going to admit it, but I believe they're going to regret this situation.
And
because when you walk away from $15 million as a young person, I've been through the NFL, and I've had a great post-career. It's hard to recover from $15 million. Like, you're never going to get that year back, and you're never going to get that $15 million back.
Listen, we are never going to officially know if Le'Veon Bell made the right decision or not, because we're not going to know if he was going to get hurt. Now, I know, see, your philosophy in your playing career was, if I'm supposed to get hurt, I'm going to get hurt. I'm not even going to have that in my mind. And maybe that's one of the reasons that you went through basically the entirety of your career without ever suffering a major
injury. Tell me what other path there is. Tell me what other path there is in pro sports. Either I'm going to train my body as hard as I can and not worry about getting injuries, or what's the other? Oh, I'm going to worry about getting injuries.
Well, I think once you are playing, obviously, during the game, you shouldn't. It would be to your detriment to worry about getting hurt. Le'Veon Bell was in a specific situation where the decision was to play a season or not and to have the injury factor, the specter of injury factor into that. But I don't think that was the only thing he was factoring into that. I think he was factoring in, do I want, for the next football game I play, have the team be invested in my long-term future or just my this year future? We're not going to know. There's no way to prove one way or another if Le'Veon Bell made the right decision or wrong decision. The only way we'll know definitively he made the wrong decision is if nobody offers him the contract he thinks he's going to get. Is if he next year signs for 2 years, $14 million, and it's like, wait, what the hell just happened? But if he gets a big deal from the Jets or the Colts or the Texans or whomever, the question will be, would he have gotten that if he played for the Steelers? Would he have not? Would he have gotten that plus the $14 million from Pittsburgh? We don't know that.
I always believe he would have gotten the money. We've seen guys who have injuries.
Gotten any the money talent, from?
Any other team. Like, he would have gotten the money even if he got hurt in Pittsburgh. When talented players hit free agency, they get paid. We see guys who aren't talented getting paid. Talented players hitting free agency, it's consistent. They get paid. Now, the Kaepernick thing, it was odd. The Eric Reed thing, it was odd. But the rest of the players, just look at the history. These guys get paid. They get paid. Hurt or not hurt. Good players are not good players in free agency.
All right, so now you have the Steelers. They look at James Conner, and they say, okay, we got our guy. Can they use James Conner the same way they use L. Bell? Is it possible that they're going to wear him out a little too much?
Well, so listen, thus far James Conner has equaled, if not bettered, Le'Veon Bell's best year as far as through nine games.
Yeah.
He's played like a Pro Bowl, all-pro caliber running back. The only concern for me if I'm Pittsburgh in regards to James Conner specifically is the most touches he's ever had in a year of football in his life is a little over 300, 303 his sophomore year at Pitt. Obviously, last year he had almost none, and this year he's on pace for 360, and that's before you get to the playoffs. So I do think there is legitimate reason to be concerned about will he get better as the year goes on, maintain, or will he drop off? I don't think there's any way to predict that. I don't think that we just have to see what type of player he is.
Every young running back, we make these excuses of why they're not going to be durable. Oh, once they're successful, you know what we start doing? Oh, we should monitor their carries. Well, why should we do that? Well, we don't know if he can do it in pro football, even if a guy was a workhorse. So James Conner, there's nothing he could do that would have proven. If he had 300 carries in college, we would be saying, I don't know if he could do this in pro football. So his narrative, it wouldn't have changed at all. Like, they are done with L. Bell. They're not sitting around talking about L. Bell. What they're trying to do is improve on the things that they have done through nine games. James Conner is their franchise running back. They have decided that. The conversation about L. Bell, they're over with. The Pittsburgh Steelers have moved on. And we as a show, I hope that we move on and talk about the Steelers and what their potential is. I wouldn't be worried. I never worry about a running back in his carries and everything, what his career is going to be. I remember this a number of years ago, DeMarco Murray. Oh, man, is he carrying the ball too much? He was having one of the greatest seasons ever. That's how you see records get broken, by pushing a guy to the threshold and seeing if he can endure, if he can't endure. There is no equation to be able to determine, will James Conner be able to continue on this pace? If L. Bell was come, if he had come back during training camp and he was right now, we'd be asking the same question.
Absolutely.
Would L. Bell be healthy during the stretch? Are they overusing
him? No. Listen, I want to make it clear. I wasn't talking about will the way the Steelers use James Conner this year affect his future. I'm saying there is, with any young running back, you're correct, with any young running back, anyone who's ever, we're asking them to do something they've never done, the question is, can they do it? And that's what the Steelers now have to deal with. They're not going to be in a situation where they're going to be splitting carries. They're not going to be in a situation where he's going to go back to a backup role. He's going to have the exact role he's had through nine games the rest of the year, and we will have the rest of the year to see if that is a workload that he can handle. Thus far, he's passed every benchmark perfectly, but we have no evidence that he can or cannot in December and into January.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, let's talk some Cowboys. Is Dallas going to the playoffs? Pretty simple question. The answer, not that simple. Next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First, it is our favorite time of the week. Three-time Super Bowl champ Mark Schlereth joins the show. No matter what happens now, we've already won.
Now, Jim, what are you going to do, though? Because yesterday, Bart Scott, Canty earlier in the week, you had the same read. You told them
that
it was
the favorite guest.
That was like your thing. Remember that?
Yeah.
Our favorite hour of the week?
You had to get them told on that. Exactly.
Okay, that is not true. Okay. I've changed the adjective.
Okay.
Today, you are our favorite guest.
Okay.
Stink. Let's get going here. Hey, if we squint and stretch and allow ourselves to be completely open-minded, then it is possible the Dallas Cowboys are back in the playoff picture. Technically, their win Sunday night over the Eagles did put them at 4-5, tied with Philly, not far behind Washington, who sits atop the division at 6-3. So who's going to win the division? Troy Aikman has a take that may surprise you.
Right now, if I had to pick somebody, I would I'd pick Dallas. The Thanksgiving game is huge, but I think that if Dallas can keep it within two games going into Thanksgiving and then win that game, I think they're positioned pretty well. The next week or so will be interesting to see what happens.
All right, so, Stink, what exactly does Dallas have to do if they do want to do this? They want to take the NFC East.
You watch the way they played, the way they controlled the line of scrimmage on both lines of scrimmage. We get so caught up in quarterback play. We get so caught up in, what is a guy doing throwing the ball, and how many deep shots does he take, and is he just underneath? When you dominate a line of scrimmage like they dominated the Philadelphia Eagles on both sides of the line of scrimmage, you're going to win most of your games, 85% of your games. And one of the big changes for them, they changed their left guard. Their rookie left guard struggled. Connor has struggled.
Yep. He was undersized.
A little undersized. Connor Williams had the knee injury. Xavier, what's his name? Suofilo.
Yep.
He came in.
High pick by the Texans.
Right. He came in there and absolutely struggled in the first drive and then dispensed justice. I mean, he went out there and just drove people. And they started running the ball. They had all the play action stuff. They had all the zone read stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, if they do that on a consistent basis, they can play with any team. When they show up like that and they understand that we're just going to out-hit
you. How many times, though, have you seen that happen from this team? How many times have they been able to do that?
It's been inconsistent. But a lot of times it's inconsistent because you get away from it. You get to the point where, like, there's a thing. A lot of offensive coordinators and a lot of just, let's just call them coaches in general, like, you don't get a lot of juice outside the facility if you're handing the ball off and you're just dominating the line of scrimmage and you're not making any specials and you're not doing.
Not in this NFL.
Right, no.
It's hard to function.
Because what ends up happening to you is you just become a guy that has, they're the best O-line in the business, and, they just can run the ball.
2 years
and,
ago.
They could just do this.
You mean, so you're saying the coordinator doesn't get credit in the media and in NFL circles for winning that way
Let me ask you this. Every guy that's coordinating right now, what's his desire?
To be a head coach.
To be a head coach. If it's the system and it's the physicality and it's the O-line and it's Zeke Elliott and you're not getting any credit for the quarterback development, how often are you going to get another opportunity when you've been a head coach before to get another head coaching job? You're not. Your name doesn't come up. It doesn't come up with the Lincoln Rileys. It doesn't come up with the other, the Sean McVays back in the day or the Matt Nagy.
Or even Pat Shurmur, who got another chance because people saw, look at what he can do with Case Keenum. Like, that was the case for him.
The problem is what wins and what consistently wins and what will never change is dominating the line of scrimmage. But what doesn't get you a job at the next level is having your team just dominate the line of scrimmage because you're not getting credit for that as a coordinator.
And it's about matchups. Dominating the line of scrimmage, and you got to be concerned about what you see in Washington. You cannot overcome the significant injuries that they have on their offensive line. Adrian Peterson, as we get late in the month of November, December, as those carries start to hold up because that offense has struggled of late to be able to move the football. They tried to do everything they could to give the game away to Tampa Bay. They tried to do everything
that
they could.
I never seen anything like that before.
So I could understand when you look at the Cowboys, they made a change as far as their offensive line coach, made a possible change as far as the scheme, doing more combo blocks and then getting up on those linebackers, allowing them to run. Who they have and the way they're playing and who they're going to match up with, I could understand why Troy is saying that. But also Troy is saying that after he saw them beat the Eagles, so he knows the head-to-head, know they play them again back at home. He knows that, he skipped over the Atlanta game, so he already gave him a victory in the Atlanta game. So now they're 500. All right, so now they're 500. Get them to Thanksgiving. They have a huge advantage of playing at home on Thanksgiving. Any team that plays traditionally on Thanksgiving at home has a huge advantage over that road team that's traveling. So I could understand why he'd been like, let me look down the road 2 weeks and yeah, I could see why he would be able to pick them because of the strength of the Cowboys is one of the weaknesses that the Redskins will have.
Right. This is the case for Dallas. It's very simple. Dallas has struggled on the road all year. Their only road win was the Eagles. The rest of the year, after the Atlanta game, their only road games left are the Colts and the Giants. Even on the road, we can beat those teams. Point two,
The Washington O-line against the Dallas front, exactly the point you made. The team we're chasing, they have been devastated by injury at the spot. We might be the strongest on our team, that defensive front seven. And point three, and the one Troy didn't mention but goes unspoken with any NFC's discussion, is how many wins you really need to win this division?
Mm-hmm.
It ain't 10. Right. I don't think so. Like, I think 9 probably gets it done. That's the case for Dallas. Here's the case against Dallas. There's only 5 teams in the conference we know they're better than. The Giants, the Lions, the Bucks, the Cards, and the Niners. Those are the only teams in the conference they have a better record than, and those are the only teams in the conference that by the eye test I can say, oh, they're clearly better than. There's 16 teams in this conference. The case against Dallas is, yeah, we can't just give them the Atlanta game. And I'm not ready to just give them the Washington game. And the week after that, they got the Saints. Like, the case against Dallas is, in 2018, passing's never been more important. Despite everything you're saying being true, it's never been more important. And they have the most limited quarterback of any team that is in the playoff discussion. The case against Dallas, to me, is an easier one to make than the case for Dallas. But I understand how you can make the case for Dallas.
Look, all I know is that we sit out here, and after every single game so far this season, we've said, well, if Dallas did this consistently, and oh, if Dallas could just do, if they can give Zeke 25 carries, or oh, a buck 50, that's great. Yardage for him is great. And Dak just has to throw this.
Right.
But they haven't found 2 weeks in a row where they can't even get home and away right. I mean, they're so inconsistent that I have yet to see this team put it all together more than one game at a time, which is what you'll need to do if you do want to pick up
those wins. That is true, Jenna. But we're going to have probably 2 to 4 teams in the month of November. They're going to get a little glimpse of hope, and they're going to start with injuries or what. They're going to overcome those things. Quarterbacks who aren't completing passes down the field. That's what we see every year. Teams adjust. They're through that training camp, that adjustment phase, and they get into some things that they do well. Is Dallas going to be one of those teams? That's the question. There's a bunch of teams right now, 500, one game above 500, one game under 500. But they're going to find their way and find themselves being in that playoff hunt and making that last step and getting over. Dallas will be one of those teams. They have enough good players. But we can't get distracted to think that just because they're in the playoff hunt that this is a good football team.
Exactly.
This is what...
But I think that's the thing, though. There are a lot of teams that are in the playoff hunt that aren't good football teams. There's only a few. There's only a handful of really good football teams. And I will say this. If they dominate, again, a big if they dominate line of scrimmage, Scott Linehan, you mentioned the matchups. They'll create matchups. They'll create, in that passing game, they'll create one-on-ones. If they can run the ball like that, they'll create a bunch of one-on-ones. And then it's just, can our guys beat your guys? Can you beat them? Because they'll have a bunch of different matchups that will be set within the parameters of their receiving core. There is no question they'll get one-on-ones. Can you break it? Can you break
free? And Amari Cooper has helped out that core.
Sure.
Because those guys are just role players now. They truly have a number one in Amari. And, yes, they are positioned to be able to make this push towards the end. But there are several teams that can do that also, Jenna.
All right, well, it starts with the Falcons on Sunday. Mark, stick around. Coming up, does Aaron Rodgers' playoff push begin tomorrow night? Speaking of, that's next on First Things First. Tomorrow, Aaron Rodgers and the Packers battle Russell Wilson and the Seahawks in a fierce NFC showdown. It all starts at 7:30 Eastern on Fox NFL Network and streaming on Prime Video.
Jenna, tune in at 7:30. Yours truly will be on the pregame show.
Yeah,
right here on Fox Square.
Ooh, love it.
I'm going to come just to be a member of the crowd. I'm going to hold a Chris Carter sign.
Of course you are.
Right outside Fox Square.
I'm not, but y'all right. Look for it while I'm watching on TV.
Here with Schlereth.
Good looking guy
is. We're going viral.
Yeah.
So when Sink is here.
Yes, exactly.
Here.
It's Stockton.
he's in the booth calling games every Sunday, and when he isn't working hard on a Sunday, he stays busy in other ways.
Oh, hey, how are you?
Beautiful day here in Colorado. 60 degrees and sunny. And I know what you're thinking, and the answer is yes. I do my own yard work, of course I do. No self-respecting dude doesn't. And yeah, I am freaking yoked. Man 101, you're welcome.
Stink, I didn't know that was one of your lines. Because Stink walked into our office a couple weeks ago.
Well, that's where it became one of my lines.
Oh, so okay. Then, yeah. When you saw the reaction.
Yeah. So I was like, all right. Well,
I think you might have learned that from your dad. Because I think that's something your dad.
Oh, yeah. You know what they call my dad? Poolside.
Poolside?
Poolside. Because he's at the side of the pool doing push-ups all the time.
Really?
My dad's 79 years old, still benches 300 pounds.
Wow.
When he came into town last month and everything, you were out of the house and something came in. He was out in the back doing some work with his shirt off.
Yeah, causing a riot in the neighborhood. I was like, Dad, put a shirt on, man. Nobody wants to see that.
Stink walked into our post-show meeting wearing that exact T-shirt, sticks his head in right after his radio show ends, and says, I know what y'all are thinking. I am Yokes. Yeah. And walked right out.
Great mind.
My man.
No.
All right, time for stories.
How do you look better post-career than during the career?
Because I was on a strict diet of taco meat and cheese whiz when I was playing in the NFL.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Stories brought to you by the unexpected energy of ExxonMobil. Jimmy Butler met the Philadelphia media yesterday and, among other things, was asked about Markelle Fultz's shooting woes. Butler said that from what he can tell, a lot of things are mental.
Man.
Nick, what do you make of those comments? Yeah.
I mean, he's right, but that's one of those things you don't say. Hey, guys, nice to meet you. Your number one pick? Yeah, I think it's all in his head. You don't say that.
Well, the thing about it, part of the press conference, though, he was talking about in the NBA, 90% of everything you do in the NBA is confidence and it's mental. So he believes that that's what he was saying leading up to it, that, yes, a lot of it is mental because we've known him to have a great shooting stroke. But when he damaged his shoulder, there was some nerve damage, and what he has is real. Man. And will it get solved? No one knows that.
I don't know. I never seen the double clutch free throw.
I don't know. That's
to make a couple after that.
Are you
that,
sure
though.
You're right-handed? But that's what I saw.
That's Ben Simmons.
Yeah,
they got shooting problems in Philly.
Maybe switch hands.
All right, we're still in the NBA. The Rockets finally put a good one together. James Harden scored 19 of his 22 in the second half. Houston beat the Nuggets 109-99. See, is this Rockets team finally starting to turn a corner?
Oh, no, Jenna. No, they're not going to be that good. What they want to do is just try to get into the playoffs. They miss all those guys that the general manager and other Rockets fans, oh, we're not going to miss those guys. They miss them. This, them, if they are a top four seed, I'd be shocked in the West.
They seem to have, for the second time in this era, a post-Western Conference Finals hangover. The last time they made the Conference Finals and lost to the Warriors, they limped to the 8 seed the next year. They seem to be on path for the same thing this year, but yesterday was a good win. That Nuggets, by the way, 4 losses in a row, 3 losses in a row at home. That's something you're not used to seeing. Jokic got to start living up to his billing a little bit more on the offensive.
I remember when my Nuggets were 9-1.
Yeah. Long ways away.
Yeah.
Not many changes in the college football playoff rankings. In fact, the top 10 stayed exactly the same. Stink, honestly, can anyone beat Alabama?
No. You know what they do? Yeah, not that they have to recruit. You would know better than I do. I think, now this is just my theory, that they just hang around the grocery aisle where they sell razors and wait for 10-year-olds who shave, and then they just give them scholarships right there. Just like, hey, kid, you shave? Boom, scholarship. Because they're men amongst boys.
Nick Saban got on the media because he said, hey, man, every time you guys think I go to the bathroom, I do a number 2. That I
get a 5-star.
The result is a 5-star. Well, you know, it's close.
Yeah.
It's close.
I see what you're saying.
Here, well, that is what Saban said.
Excuse me.
Oh, God. Jenna, please read.
Anybody
finally,
got a Toto?
With poor field conditions in Mexico City, the NFL has officially moved Monday night's much-anticipated matchup between the Chiefs and the Rams to Los Angeles. So, Nick, how big of a deal is home field advantage now for the Rams?
Listen, I think typically the Rams have one of the least home field advantages of any team in football because people travel to L.A. This is going to be a different circumstance because people usually plan that trip to L.A. A lot of Chiefs fans planned and Rams fans planned trips to Mexico City. Where I think this is a big deal, yeah, it favors the Rams by maybe a point more than they otherwise would be, is the NFL did the right thing here. You've got some of the bright stars of the leagues, present and future, on these two teams. And I want to see Todd Gurley or Tyreek Hill or Patrick Mahomes or any of those guys, anybody, playing on that field at Stadium Azteca.
Tell people why.
I mean, because it was a mess. I mean, it was...
Oh, no, it was a mess.
It was worse than...
It was unplayable.
It was unplayable. I know people say FedEx Field and Heinz Field. It was nothing like that.
The game was not going to go on because the players were going to refuse to play. And that's the player's right that they have being part of the union. Are you going to present me with a work environment that is conducive for me to do my job? No player is going to risk his career in Mexico. You mean we got all these great stadiums around the United States, and now the problems that we have, typically we're outside the U.S. Mexico City, we're having problems with that stadium. In London, we've had problems with their stadium because they're grass. They won't do field turf because field turf is not conducive to real football.
Right, to
soccer. And as much as they're going to play soccer in those stadiums, they keep the natural surface there, so you have problems. Every year we play there, you see footing problems with NFL. The greatest athletes in the world have problems with their footing. When you can't have proper footing, you can't do your job. There is no job. Kicking game, offense and defensive linemen, skilled guys, there is no job that you can do your job when you have a bad surface.
You know, it's interesting too, on the stadiums outside of this country that focus on soccer, okay, I think they roll those fields to make sure they get true roll on the ball.
Yes.
And what ends up happening, and I played in Mexico City, that field is like a skating rink. Oh, your cleats, like, they don't even sink into the turf.
Yeah, what they try to do for the soccer surface is mat it down, roll it down,
right,
but the surface is a lot tighter than a normal football
field.
But it makes
and the
reason
field
why,
super hard.
It makes the bounces on the ball more true for soccer players.
And so the field is so hard that, like, I'm telling you, the footing is horrible. The game I played one in Mexico City, the footing was horrible. And I've talked to other guys who have played there that said the same thing. So there's an issue there. And obviously, you know what? I mean, you say, oh, it's an advantage now for the Rams. Nobody wants to go to Mexico City to play. I'm just telling you, as a player, ain't nobody. So the Chiefs are happy about going to L.A.
And for football fans, this is, up to this point, the game of the year in the NFL. It's going to end up being one of the two or three best games or games between teams with the best record we have all year. Now we're going to get to see it on fair conditions. The fact that the Rams get home field advantage is their home game. They're supposed to have home field advantage. Like, I'm glad this game got moved. Now we get to get a good idea of who between these two teams who actually is the best.
All right, let's move on to a game where it will not be played in a place where there's bad footing. Thursday Night Football, battle of two of the NFL's best quarterbacks fighting for their playoff lives. Aaron Rodgers and the 4-4-1 Packers taking on Russell Wilson and the 4-5 Seahawks. Short week for the Pack. Coming off their win over Miami, now they head to one of the toughest places to play in Seattle. All right, Stink, which quarterback has to do more for their team to win on Thursday? Who's carrying the heavier load, Rodgers or Wilson?
Well, it's going to be Rodgers. I mean, this game is, you got to travel to Seattle. You've got to play in Seattle in that crowd noise. You've got to control the silent cadence. There's so much that you as a quarterback have to do to overcome playing on the road in Seattle. It always falls on Aaron Rodgers' shoulders, right? And I know that Jones is running the ball well. I know they've got some things going on there offensively right now. But going in that environment, you're the one. The onus is on you, especially with cadence. The only advantage you have as an offense or an offensive lineman in those situations is snap count. That's the only. I mean, we're the worst athletes on the field. So the only advantage we have is snap count. Now you take that advantage away from us on the road, and you've got to put it on Aaron Rodgers. That Aaron Rodgers has so much more on his shoulders than does Russell Wilson.
Even though, Nick, Seahawks have lost 4 of the last 5 in Seattle.
Well, listen, and that's shocking, given, I mean, even if you expect them to take a step back this year, you would expect them to hold home field advantage. But the Seahawks have the number one rushing game in football right now. They are the number one rush offense in football. They just put up 270 on the Rams. 270 and a loss for the Rams. They were down 12 points with 5 minutes left and still running the football. Like, I will give them credit. Ever since Marshawn Lynch left, they had struggled to find a running game. This year, they seem to have found one. Now, the Packers this past week, Aaron Jones had the best game of his career. They are finding a running game as well. But I agree with Stink. I think that in this specific game and these two teams in totality, Rodgers is asked and needed to do more than Russell Wilson, even though historically a ton for the Seahawks to move the ball has been on Russell Wilson's shoulders.
What I've seen from the Saints Saints and what they did last week against the Rams, what they did against the Rams, very, very impressive. To me, the running game is about resolve. It's not about who's got the better personnel. It's about resolve that I'm going to run the ball today. There's not a front. There's not anything you're going to do to stop me from running that. If the Packers, when they get off the bus, their offensive coordinator, if they decide to do that and support Aaron Rodgers the way they did last week. Aaron Jones, like, that's what they have to be able to do. I just believe that Seattle is more committed to doing it. I've seen this season. They're trying to transfer from being a Russell just make plays and trying to present a running game to them. So, for me, I believe the pressure will be put back on Aaron Rodgers because that's what we've seen. They get down, they get in the game, and now it's Aaron, bring us back. Aaron makes some magic. Right. So Aaron's going to have to do more.
By the way, two of those losses at home, one to the Rams, pretty good.
Two-point loss.
One to the Chargers, lost it on the very last play of the game. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, two really good teams that came into Seattle and beat them. And I think you have to understand, you know, as much of a transition has gone on, you talk about the running game in Seattle, that transition on defense is real. I mean, you're talking about all four guys in that defensive secondary are four different dudes from the Legion of Boom just a few years ago. Mm-hmm. You know, your linebacker Bobby Wagner is the one constant on that team. Frank Clark is a really good player, but he doesn't have anybody on the other edge really taking control. Mebane is now playing for the Chargers. I mean, there has been a lot of guys that have left there, and they're trying to rebuild that and trying to reestablish themselves as a dominant defense, and that takes time.
Which team do you trust more if they got into the playoffs? Because you may think Seattle's playing a better game. You'd play the Packers.
The Packers. And is it if they get into the playoffs, I trust the Packers more. Because if either of these teams gets in, obviously they're going to have to be very hot going in because they're going to have to win something like 6 of 7 down the stretch. But if the Packers get in, they're the team I trust more. They have been very good this year at getting to the quarterback. If they get in, it will mean Aaron Jones has continued on this stretch. And obviously they have Aaron Rodgers. For all those reasons, the Packers would be the team that if they get in, I trust more.
Yeah, if you get to 4-4-1, you're at 4-5, it's hard to get some trust. But you have to pick one of them. It's Seattle, they're not playing well at home, even though those two losses are very, very difficult. Seattle, man, since Pete Carroll's been there, they've been either 8-0 or 7-1 at home.
At home.
And then now they lose that.
Yeah.
They've been barely a 500 club, even in their Super Bowl years with Pete Carroll there. So I got to say, I trust the Pack. I don't trust neither one of them. But the Pack, the Cheeseheads would get it.
Yeah. And I'm the same. I would go with the Packers. I'd go with Aaron Rodgers. And they're going to get, you know, the thing about playing youth early is eventually late, guess what they start to do? They start to mature and start to understand it. In that receiving core, you know, with Cobb being out and injured, and they've had a lot of different machinations of players that have played a lot.
Equanimeous St. Brown, Valdez, Scantling.
Yeah, they're going to start to play. Those guys were going to get more and more experience toward the end of the season when you have to make that push, you know, in the last 4 weeks of the season.
The only thing I worry about with young receivers, man, when it gets real cold in Green Bay, man, you need veteran guys who are used to it. Young guys, let me see them do it. Let me see Donald Driver. Let me see Greg Jennings. Man, let me see. These guys came through. When the Packers are good, they're wide receivers. I'm talking about sub-zero. They make some unbelievable catches. Jordy Nelson, can they do that? Now, that right there is something I got to see.
That sounds awful. Oh, just thought I'd say that.
Miserable.
Sub-zero. That ball. Stink, stay with us coming up. Can the Steelers win a Super Bowl without Al Bell? Next on First Things First. Back here with Mark Schlereth, we are going viral. So James Harden dropped 22 points, 5 boards, 11 assists in a win over the Nuggets last night. The Beard had some extra motivation in Denver with several Rams players in attendance, including Todd Gurley, Jared Goff, Marcus Peters, and Aqib Talib. I don't know why I said it like that.
The Rams are in Denver. They were training at altitude.
Right, they're training over at Air Force Academy is where they are.
For the Mexico City game that now is going to be played in L.A. That's a nice little
Then they all
nice
came back.
That's what, the Patriots did last year. They came to they came out to Colorado Springs, trained at the Air Force Academy, and then went on to Mexico City.
And the owner of the Rams owns the Nuggets, right?
Stan and the Avalanche.
Yeah. And the Avalanche. Okay. Three team.
Oh, yeah. He's rich. He married into some money,
He had some money, and then he married a Walmart heir, so he got even more money. That ain't bad.
Good work if you can get it.
Yeah.
All right, Stink. Back here. First things first. It became official yesterday. Le'Veon Bell will not play pro football in 2018. The All-Pro running back did not report to the Steelers by 4 p.m. yesterday. That was the deadline for him to play under the franchise tag. He wanted to protect his body to go out and get a big money deal in 2019. Now we'll see if that can happen. He left $14.5 million on the table. Here's Steelers head coach Mike Tomlin.
I understand that business is an element of the game of football. And there are elements of the game, relationships within the game, football-related relationships that we all hold near and dear and understand. And then football at this level, there's also the business element. And even when we don't understand it, we're sensitive to it. So we're not shocked when things happen from a business standpoint, no. Like I've said repeatedly, and I mean, I'm focused on the guys that are here, man. We got enough challenges that are significant in terms of meeting the things that we need to meet this week in terms of getting a win.
All right, Stink, break this down for us a little bit. What are the next steps now for Le'Veon Bell?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a great question, and I'm not exactly sure how that process goes, but obviously it seems to me that they have, because they haven't been able to come to an agreement, and because he's going to sit this season out, that I know there's a transitional tag that they could put on him. Mm-hmm. I cannot believe they will do that after he has sat out for an entire season. I believe that he's just going to become a free agent. I think that's
that
the next step.
These two entities are better off parting ways at this point.
Yeah, and you know what? I mean, you can sit there and say, well, he'll never get his money back, or he was selfish, or like, as a player, you get the business side of this thing. And, you know, those contracts might as well be written on toilet paper because that's what they're worth from the player standpoint. The players, whatever guaranteed money you get, that's it. They'll cut you at any time. And I can't tell you how many times, and Chris has been there and I've been there, I've been a part of it. Hey, listen, you know, you're a warrior when you're playing hurt, when you're under contract. And as soon as you're up that year, it's like, hey, you didn't play as well last year. We're going to have a pay cut. And you either take the pay cut or I was told to take a pay cut. I was starting. It was Friday late afternoon before a Sunday game. They said, oh, all the rosters are full and we'll cut you on Sunday right after the game that you start if you don't take a pay cut on Friday. And there's a new contract sitting at the office and you're like, all right. And I just took a pay cut. Why? Because they can. And it happens all the time. So, you know, when we get angry with players for holding out and you say, on your contract, just understand on the business side that the organization never honors their contract.
And Le'Veon, in this specific situation, didn't even have a contract to honor. He wasn't under contract. That's why this situation is a unique one to where he didn't have to report by week 10. A guy that's holding out because he wants a new contract, those guys have to report by yesterday's deadline because or else the year doesn't count, doesn't toll. But so for Le'Veon, what's next is he's going to get what he's wanted this whole time, which is to hit unrestricted free agency and see what his market is. Now, see, I know you have some concerns about whether or not that market might be depressed, partially because teams are concerned about the drug history, partially because some GMs might be turned off from how he handled this, and partially because the market could be artificially depressed, as we saw happen, I believe, to Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reid. Whether or not teams will say, man, we are not going to let the precedent be that you can essentially void a franchise tag by sitting out a year. So we'll see if Le'Veon goes and gets his money. But one of his objectives, I believe, was to hit free agency fully healthy. He's achieved that one. Now we'll see how valuable in real dollars that ends up actually being.
Yeah, whatever happens as far as his career and everything, it's going to be hard to say, oh, was he right or was he wrong? But there's a couple things, a couple principles that I do know in dealing with the National Football League. When you were dealing with the Washington Redskins, and they had Joe Gibbs running this show, because I know this, and Mike Tomlin talks about this. There's certain relationships that you have in pro sports that become very, very important. You know, Joe Gibbs got to do what he's got to do.
Right.
But there's a certain man that you're there to try to help him to be able to do his job. He's going to try to help you do your job. I don't agree with Le'Veon Bell not having communication with Mike Tomlin. from one standpoint, as an African-American head coach, Mike Tomlin gets criticized. He gets raked over the coals as far as him not having discipline, not having discipline. L. Bell could have helped him out this year. He did not personally help him. Now, Mike Tomlin personally reached out to L. Bell to try to be able to help him. If he was going to get a contract extension, Mike Tomlin was going to have something to do with that. So I just believe he misplayed that whole situation. I don't believe you can make up $15 million. And also, I do know that the NFL owners, they get on the phone, they do talk. And he did not enhance the running back market by I'm not going to play for Pittsburgh this year. You guys know a running back in Arizona? He's pretty good, isn't he?
David Johnson.
Do we talk about him on the show?
No.
You know the reason why? Because he played for a loser, and he don't play for one of the marquee franchises. So, L. Bell, that's also available in free agency, too. You go to a team who does not win, is not in the playoff hunt, he's going to be shocked. By the lack of visibility that he's going to have when he is out of that Pittsburgh Steelers uniform, because I do know that means something in the football world.
I will say this, and I believe this, and I've talked to coaches, I've talked to other people about this. There are maybe 10, 12 franchises in the National Football League that are truly about winning championships, and then there's the other 20.
And the Steelers are one of those first 10.
If it comes our way, if all the stars are aligned, this is going to be great. We'll ride it. But we're just about, you know, our franchise growing in equity every year.
And I have no reason to believe that for Le'Veon Bell, that one thing that I fully agree with Chris on is that Le'Veon Bell has made it very clear that when he's prioritizing the ability to win a Super Bowl is not at top of mind. And I'm not saying it has to be. But when Le'Veon Bell is weighing off.
But say that. Stop lying. All these guys out here, I'm trying to win a championship. I'm trying to sacrifice. Just stop lying. Say I'm in it for the money. Deion Sanders, he told you. When I'm in it for the money and when I'm in it to try to win me a championship. When he went to Washington, he would make no promises. When he went to San Francisco, hey, y'all want to get this side of the field shut down and win a championship? And it's going to cost you. Yeah. It's going to cost you. Deion is one of the guys that has really taught me about take care of the business. And I don't believe that Le'Veon Bell did himself a service in taking care of his business this year. What he did to Mike Tomlin, what he did to the Pittsburgh organization by listening to his agent. His agent had to believe in his agent works for him. So to me in this relationship, it looked like L. Bell working for his agent.
Yes or no, James Conner fills the role that Lev Bell.
James Conner's been outstanding. He's not L. Bell catching the ball, but he's been out. I mean, he is a legit NFL running back, man. He is running through people, and he brings the physicality. He brings a physicality that I really, frankly, I like.
And his hands surprised people this year, how good his hands were all the back.
Yeah.
Sting, thanks so much for hanging out with us today.
My pleasure.
I always love having you. Coming up, can the Sixers win an NBA title this season? Next on First Things First. Tonight, it's a Gavis tip-off games doubleheader. First, reigning champs Villanova facing off Michigan in a rematch of last year's national championship game. Then Marquette takes on Indiana. It all starts at 6 p.m. Eastern on FS1 or watch anywhere on the Fox Sports app. All right, we're going to get to Jimmy Butler in a second. You want to talk about this?
But first, the Michigan-Nova game, if we can. I mean, it's a rematch national championship game, but the teams are going to look very different. No Mo Wagner for Michigan, obviously. Villanova, we know they lost seemingly all of their key guys from their two championship teams, but most notably last year's. Nova's one of the best teams in the country, I believe. Again, I know Coach Wright would say, don't overrate us. You know, that's hype.
That's
Michigan's
why we like
also
them.
One of the very good teams in the country. This is, in my eyes, outside of that opening weekend Duke-Kentucky game, this is as good of a preseason non-con game as we're going to get in college basketball this year.
Yeah, I know I criticize Michigan an awful lot, but if you look at who they have as a basketball coach and as a football coach, man, they're in great shape. Their athletic director's done a good job. Michigan's basketball coach is amazing. He gets everything out of his players. Players play hard. If they can treat us to anything what the national championship game was like, it'll be a treat to them.
This is a match. John Beilein, 541 career wins. Our guy Jay, 544 career wins. So just a little over 1,000 career wins between these two guys tonight. Should be an awesome game right here on FS1.
Good stuff. All right, look forward to it. We will get to Jimmy Butler in a second, but first, Chris Paul embarrasses Nikola Jokic with some fancy dribbling.
To quote
Rob Perez on Twitter. He got Jokic looking like those inflatable things in front of car dealerships. They put the air through with the arms are flailing about.
I love the dribbling when they go between their legs backwards now. That's a new thing.
Oh, yeah.
All right, look, college, Georgetown, Illinois, Mac McClung drives baseline. Watch the up and under move for the reverse layup.
We see Mac above the rim a lot, see? Now we're seeing a little below the rim.
Oh, he's
Mac
a favorite
McClung.
Of the show. I know sometimes people see this and wonder, man, what the heck happened? Someone from the student body at Georgetown ran on the court. No, Mac is real. Dude got some – he's got game.
He's got game, man. He and Zion are going to create so many highlights this year.
Yeah, now, they born on two different sides of the earth.
Finally, LSU Memphis, Skylar Mays just destroys Mike Parks Jr. with a vicious slam.
Oh,
Skylar, let's do this. He crossed him over. He brings him inside, then he brings him out with the three-point line, fakes like he was going to go up for the three-pointer. He also had another amazing finish at the rim right after this.
And that's what you get for trying to take that weak charge. Either get out the way or try to block him.
Yeah, try to block it, man.
Don't try to take that weak charge.
All right, moving on to what many are now calling the team to beat in the East, the Sixers. Jimmy Butler was officially introduced to the city of Philadelphia yesterday. He now joins Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, and we can finally all admit the process has been trusted, as the Sixers have one of the best cores in the NBA. Just ask Jimmy Butler.
Obviously, to win a championship. That is why I play, why we play, why they did what they did, is to win. That's our goal. I can tell you that right now. I've talked to them about it. So that will be a success. But
we have a championship window, and it's important that we do whatever it takes to capitalize on it. So it was important to us to go get a superstar, to go get some young talent to help make that next step in achieving a championship. We have a great core, as we know, including Joel and Ben, and this trade gave us that opportunity to add an elite player like Jimmy Butler.
Nick, is Elton Brand right? Is the Sixers window right now?
Absolutely, yes. The Sixers are built. If we can just throw the Warriors out for a minute, because I know they've changed the math for everybody. The Sixers are built, and this is where I'm going to try to sway you, C, because I know you have real questions about them.
This is going to be difficult.
Okay. The Sixers are built the way the championship teams of your entire lifetime have been built. They've got a dominant big, a top five player in the league in Joel Embiid, a guy that's playing like an MVP right now, not what he will be right now. They now add to it an all-star caliber top 20 wing, and then their third best guy can be Ben Simmons. They to go along with that, an elite defense, one of the best defenses in the NBA last year that I think just got better defensively, adding Jimmy Butler. Their complementary piece is a knockdown shooter in J.J. Redick. Now, they're not a perfectly built team. They're a team that probably does still need to add another rotation player, but how many champions in NBA history have we seen? Top five MVP candidate, big guy, excellent wing two ways, and then really nice additional pieces. One other all-star in Ben Simmons. Like, of course that is a championship caliber team. Of course that's a team that can look eye to eye with any team in the East and say, we're as good as you.
They only have two players that can play at a championship level. That's Joel Embiid, right now, probably the MVP of the NBA. He's amazing. He's grown his game. He's drawing so many fouls and getting to the free throw line. The numbers are astonishing just what he's doing. And Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler will knock down some shots. But in this new NBA, it's not the NBA that I grew up in. You have to have spacing on the court. Like, defense can only carry you so far. Most of those championships, they were great defensive teams in the era that you're talking about. But now, man, you got to be able to score the basketball, and you have to – you can't disregard the analytics going on in basketball. You can't disregard spacing in basketball. None of these championship teams are going to be put together. And the reason why I don't believe they're as high as Nick is, they got a problem with Ben Simmons. And the problem is Ben Simmons thinks he's a point guard. But they need Ben Simmons to be the new and improved Draymond Green. And I'm talking about he needs to be being a great defender, being a great rebounder. He does that. But he says, read his interviews, hey, can you play the 1 through the 4? He said, yeah, but I will, but I'm a 1. I'm a point guard. Well, what are they going to do with Markelle Fultz and his whole development? Because the more he wants to be a one, the more it hurts Fultz development as a point guard. And neither one of those guys can shoot. Markelle Fultz is starting point guard right now. He's averaging 24 minutes. You know the reason why he's not averaging more than that? Because they don't trust him. So to think that they can win a championship with two of their marquee players cannot shoot the ball outside of 8 feet, that to me seems impossible.
I don't look at Markelle Fultz as one of their marquee players. I know he's the number one pick of the draft, and right now they're giving him, I think, courtesy minutes. They are going to have to. Now that they've added Jimmy Butler.
If they had a strong bench, I wouldn't have to mention him. That was the other thing I couldn't even get to. The reason why I mentioned him is because they don't have a bench. They don't. Who's their backup point guard?
Well, so Ben Simmons and Fultz split the time, which is.
There you go back to the Ben Simmons as a point.
Right.
He can't be a point. If they're going to get the maximum out of him, he can't be a point in this new NBA.
See, I guess I disagree with you on that. I think, okay. I think if they have a – because Joel Embiid shoots threes now, even though I don't need him to. We know that J.J. Redick and Jimmy Butler can. What they need is a four, which is kind of what they had in Covington, by the way, but a four that can shoot threes. You can have a guy on the court that doesn't shoot threes. It's odd if it's your point guard, but you can have it. I look at the Sixers, there's two things. One is, I think they and the Lakers will be the prime buyout candidate destinations. Last year, that's how they added Ilyasova. That's how they added, was it Bellinelli? Their other major three.
All that's fine and dandy. But we're talking about who they are right now. They can be a buyout destination, but who they are right now, they are not a championship. So Elton, in that prepared little message he had as a new general manager, and I'm pulling for him, but he said, make sure you write this down because I can't go just off the top of my head. Really? I understand the message, all right? But how are these guys going to be with Jimmy Butler there? Are these guys going to keep developing? Or, because Jimmy Butler, man, he's not easy on his teammates far as are they going to get better? That's the huge question. If they don't get drastically better, this conversation is we might as well move on. But if Ben Simmons, if he doesn't improve like Joel Embiid did, which we're just kind of granting that to him, because right now he's not better shooting the basketball than he was last season. He's actually worse. If you look at from at the bucket to 15 feet, he's actually worse than he was last year.
Which is why if they hadn't added Jimmy Butler, I would say I need to revise what I thought of the Sixers. But when you add Jimmy Butler, what you need from Ben Simmons goes down so drastically. Like, again, I don't think anyone's beating the Warriors even as they're trying to rip each other apart.
What about in the East?
They absolutely can win the East.
Who can't they beat in the East?
I mean, I think that they are eye-to-eye with Toronto and a tick better than Milwaukee.
Yeah,
and better
that's
than
just
Boston.
That's in Nick's eyes. I think that Boston has their number. And they throw so many things at Philadelphia that they're not going to. I mean, they embarrassed Philadelphia last season. So until we see them on the court in Philly much improve against Boston, let's put Boston ahead of them. You can say, oh, they're a tick ahead of Toronto and all that. I think Toronto's a lot better. And I think Milwaukee right now and Philadelphia are head-to-head as far as how they're going to grow moving forward. I believe Milwaukee has more diversity and they have more variety in their lineup than they do in Philadelphia.
I totally agree with that. Milwaukee's the only team, though, that I think has a guy that can dominate a game the way Embiid can.
Yeah, I just think that part, when I grew up, it was important to have the best player. In the new NBA, it's not that important to have the best player. So when we do this chart, they got three of the best eight. But, man, in this new NBA, you need 9 or 10 deep. And that's what Philadelphia, no one has an answer for that because they don't have it.
All right, they once had the answer. Coming up, are we seeing the beginning of the end of Kevin Durant with the Warriors? Back here, first things first, we're going viral. L. Bell didn't report to the Steelers by 4 p.m. yesterday. That was the deadline for him to play under the franchise tag, but he did have some love for one Steeler. L. Bell took to Instagram to show he is voting for his replacement, James Conner, to make the Pro Bowl.
Well, James Conner deserves Pro Bowl now. I forgot that you vote on the Pro Bowl.
I'm surprised that he got James Conner as an Instagram account. That must be hard. You know? No, because there must have been a ton of James Conners before. What? What?
I just love you, Jenna.
What do you mean?
I had to pay for
Jenna Wolf because someone else had it, and so I bought it from her.
What'd you pay?
I'm not telling you.
What'd you pay, Jenna?
The Today Show took care of it for
oh,
me.
Oh, so you didn't have to pay. The employer paid.
That's okay. But anyway, okay. Moving on.
How many lies do you tell a day?
I just want to talk about L. Bell, and that was nice of him to give James Conner a lot of love. You could see how that may not have been the case, but it was, so it's nice.
I'm much more intrigued by this whole pay situation.
Because I was... Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll explain to you in the break. Time for stories to start your morning.
Off the air.
Brought to you by the unexpected energy of ExxonMobil.
Hashtag facts.
Jimmy Butler met the Philly media yesterday, among other things, was asked about Markelle Fultz's shooting woes. Butler said that from what he can tell, a lot of things are mental. What'd you make of Butler's comments, Nick?
I mean, I think it's accurate. I don't think it's necessary. I think that this doesn't help Markelle Fultz if it is mental that his newest all-star teammate is publicly speculating about what's going on. I know he's asked a question. I think there's a lot of ways to answer this without saying that. He was just trying to be honest, but Jimmy Butler's honesty has caused him some trouble in his career.
I listened to the whole press conference, and when you listen to it in real time, it wasn't if he was trying to say something negative towards Markelle. So the fact is he's saying 90% of things in the NBA are mental. This is how you have to overcome them. You get in the gym and you work on it and you just keep working hard and hard. Those were the things that he was talking about. So it's not Jimmy Butler's fault he can't shoot. What's Jimmy Butler supposed to say?
Right.
The guy just pump faked a free throw. Have y'all ever seen someone do that in the NBA? So no. I would say unless he went through some spasm, all right, I would say it's mental.
He said the ball slipped. I'm just telling you what he said.
Moving on to college football. Not many changes in the playoff rankings. In fact, the top 10 stayed exactly the same. See, at this point, can anyone beat Alabama?
Yeah, because their quarterback is starting to get a little gimpy. If he gets knocked out of one of these games, he got knocked out of the last game in the third quarter. That knee is not getting any better, and I know Nick Saban, those practices not getting any easier. So if Alabama's quarterback happens to get hurt, yes, I do believe Alabama will lose.
And Jalen right now is not healthy. Their backup quarterback, their one that led them to the two straight national championships.
Yeah, and not
games.
That good either.
Sure, but
they go on the ground and pound if Jalen come back in there.
But I still think they would be not as heavy favorites. I still think they'd be the favorites. If we found out today Jalen Hurts, the quarterback, a healthy Jalen Hurts the rest of the way, they're still favorites.
If Jalen Hurts is the starting quarterback, I'll take the field.
Okay.
Oh.
I'll take the field, absolutely. Because that passing attack, them five-star, all that speed they got on offense, all that is negated because they don't have a downfield passing game with Jalen.
Okay.
All right, let's move on to the pro game with poor field conditions in Mexico City. The NFL has officially moved, and rightfully so. It's Monday night's much-anticipated game between the Chiefs and Rams up to Los Angeles. Nick, how big of a deal is home field advantage for the Rams here?
Listen, I think both teams would rather be playing this game in Los Angeles than in Mexico City. But obviously for the Rams now to get one of the – you got 8 home games a year. The Rams got 7 because one of their home games was a neutral site game. They now get it in Los Angeles, and you're not going to have to deal with nearly as many traveling fans as you normally do in L.A. because Chiefs fans haven't been able to plan for this. You got about 30,000 Chiefs fans in Mexico City. Don't know what they're doing, but they're not going to a football game now.
Yeah, the NFL should do something for those fans, too. This old, we're trying to grow the game. Hey, enough of that. We know it's about money. Troy, Roger, yeah, I'm talking to y'all. All right, y'all need to reimburse them fans. We got fans of Kansas City spent their savings and everything to go to Mexico City to see an NFL game. You guys didn't have a stadium that was appropriate enough, the footing for the players to be able to play. Y'all should be able to do something for them. Send them to the Super Bowl this year in Atlanta.
Do Super Bowl.
Do something for them. They're rich, man. That's what rich people do. When you have a problem, what do? You throw money at it.
You throw money at it.
People are stranded down there in Mexico City.
Know. Anything about throwing money at problems. Ending with Thursday night football, it is a battle. Nick,
what's
almost
today,
choked.
Wednesday?
Today's Wednesday.
And what do you have after the show, Jenna?
You really want me to go
no,
through
no,
it?
No, I don't.
Go ahead. Please, you have an appointment, right? You're throwing money at a problem.
It is a battle. What happened here?
Please,
a battle of two of the NFL's best quarterbacks fighting for their playoff lives. Aaron Rodgers and the 4-4-1 Packers taking on Russell Wilson and the 4-5 Seahawks. All right, it's a short week for Green Bay coming off their win over Miami, heading to one of the toughest places to play in Seattle. So see which quarterback has to do more for their team to win on Thursday. Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson?
I believe Aaron Rodgers because even though we saw the new running attack, we saw Aaron Jones bust onto the scene. Phenomenal speed, quickness. We haven't seen that from a Green Bay back in a long, long time. I just don't have the confidence and Mike McCarthy and the coaching staff to rely on that running attack week after week after week. So I've seen it. They've disappointed me. Even guys have they flash, they have a good game, a good quarter, and then they go back to relying on Aaron. So Aaron Rodgers has to do more. I believe that Russell will be supported because collectively, as an organization, they have changed their philosophy of how many times Russell's going to throw the ball. They're going to be more physical. They've shown that throughout the season and been more consistent in doing that.
I think Aaron Rodgers has to do more, but there's also one giant advantage Aaron Rodgers has that Russell Wilson doesn't, which is, this will shock people, but the Green Bay Packers sack the opposing quarterback more than any team in football. This won't shock people. The Seattle Seahawks allow more sacks of their quarterback than any team in football. So one team can get after the quarterback. One team can't protect their quarterback. So I think Russell Wilson will be under duress. Now, what Russell Wilson has going for him that Aaron Rodgers doesn't is, as you were mentioning, the number one rushing attack in football. A rushing game in Seattle that just put up 270 on the Rams. I can't remember the last time the Packers beat a good team. And even at 4-5, I think Seattle's a good team. Not an excellent team, but a good team. Can't remember the last time the Packers beat a good team without Aaron Rodgers playing great. Now, they can beat Miami. They can beat mediocre teams with other guys playing great. But for the Packers to beat good teams, they need Rodgers to play great. I assume that will also be the case tomorrow night.
All right, let's head back to the NBA now. Kevin Durant and Draymond Green testing their friendship with a heated exchange during their loss to the Clippers. That was on Monday. KD was upset that Draymond didn't pass him the ball at the end of regulation. Green reportedly called Durant a derogatory word, sticks and stones. The drama reportedly spilled into the locker room, where Draymond then brought up Durant's impending free agency. All of this resulting in Draymond being suspended last night and fined about $120,000. Warriors beat the Hawks anyway. Here's KD addressing the media after the game.
Hey, Kevin, have you and Draymond been able to hash anything out?
No.
Do you see that happening anytime soon?
I'm sure it will. We got a long season ahead.
Did he cross the line with anything last night that was said?
I'm going to keep that in house. That's what we do here. I mean, obviously, I know you guys got a job to do, but I'm not trying to give nobody no headlines. What happened, happened. We're trying to move on. Just trying to play basketball.
Kevin, just following up on that real quick, were you surprised he got suspended?
I was just focused on the game. I didn't really care either way. I was just focused on trying to come out here and finish this back-to-back off.
RCC, did any of this surprise you, or is this just the cost of playing pro sports when competition gets very heated?
No, I was very surprised. I was very surprised at how Draymond responded. You and I, we sat behind the Warriors bench when they played the Knicks a couple weeks ago here in town. And I tried to explain to you kind of the dynamics, because in that game, Cousins got thrown out of the game for arguing with a ref about a call where he approached the scorer's table. And Jen was like, what the heck is going on? I said, these are some of the dynamics that go along with the Warriors, with these explosive personalities. And, you know, to me, you have to... I'm just trying to figure out, what did Kevin Durant do that was wrong? All right? We're in a game closeout situation. We get the rebound. We got two timeouts. Coach has already told us we're not going to call timeout. We're going to try to get a better shot without getting a look from the sideline. Draymond gets the rebound. Kevin Durant calls for the ball the same way he's done since the first day he came into the NBA. Draymond Green, what has he done since he's been in the NBA? Get the rebound, give it to someone, and run down the court.
No. There's a reason Draymond Green leads them in assists. He does that a lot.
In closing out games? We're in a closeout game. We're closing the game out. The game is tied.
Yeah, game five against the Rockets in the Western Conference Finals, Draymond brought the ball up court. Now, he turned that one over as well, actually. But, Steve Kerr was fine with it. He could have called
one of
his timeouts.
Let me get back to Kevin Durant. Sure. Let me know what he did wrong, because all he did was call for the ball. All right? Draymond dribbled it off his foot, and then when they went to the sideline, what was Kevin Durant supposed to do? Just supposed to say nothing? Oh, I'm just going to stand here as a 7-footer, one of the best scorers all time in the NBA. A guy looked at me, looked me off, and decided to do something on his own. We didn't win the game, so he was not successful. The game went in overtime. They end up losing there. What did Kevin Durant? Oh, so he shouldn't have said anything when he went to the bench. Kevin Durant did exactly what he was supposed to do. The reason why he's in Golden State, build a closeout games at the end. So for me, I don't see where Kevin Durant went wrong in this. I believe there was already something there, and that's why Draymond, Forget what he said to him on the bench. He was wrong in doing that, and that would have got him suspended. But afterwards, when we go to the locker room, and now you're talking about what I'm going to do in the future, it let me know he had a problem with me before I called for the ball.
Correct. Absolutely. Now, you're saying, what did Kevin Durant do wrong? A lot of the reports are that Draymond thought Kevin Durant was not just at the bench saying, you should have given me the ball, but was talking down to him, was treating him as if it was Quinn Cook or McKinney who was bringing the ball.
Let me tell you something. No one can make you feel, if you're Draymond Green, like Quint Cook.
Oh, well,
okay.
No, maybe he can't make you feel that way, but you can feel like you
I don't even go for stuff like that. When you're an accomplished player, you're Draymond. He's from Michigan State. Coach Izzo, he's tough as there can be. Oh, you made me feel bad. Do we really believe that?
No. Not that you made me feel bad, but you are not putting, enough respect on my name. Like, don't talk to me like that. I brought you here. We were champions before you.
You didn't bring me here. My talent brought me here. The reason why you called me is because my jump shot.
Okay, absolutely. And it's been mutually beneficial. And to your point, there's clearly been bubbling under the surface the tension of the Warriors collectively, not just Draymond Green, feel like the story of this season has not been, can we win our third straight title? Can we win our fourth in 5 years?
The story has been Kevin Durant's free agency.
And Kevin Durant has not exactly ended that discussion. Kevin Durant has added to that discussion. Now, that might be his prerogative, but it's Draymond and the teammates' prerogatives. I can't believe I'm sitting on TV defending Draymond Green, but Draymond and his teammates' prerogative to...
It's Kevin Durant's fault, this whole thing?
No, I haven't said it's Kevin Durant's fault.
So you said you're defending Draymond?
Because I think both of... I think Kevin Durant spoke to Draymond a certain type of way that pushed a button. Draymond overreacted. Draymond then called him out his name, kept calling him the B word, and then in the locker room
so
said,
what's more disrespectful, Nick?
Oh,
me talking about basketball or me calling you a couple B's?
Listen, I think Draymond deserves the lion's share of the blame here. But I also do not think it raised to the level of getting suspended. Draymond damn near fought the coach 3 years ago and didn't get suspended. He was suspended because the Warriors are trying to placate Kevin Durant. He was suspended because of Durant's pending free agency.
The reason why he was suspended is because it began to carry on. It left the huddle, and as you could see, Boogie Cousins was telling him, get locked in, get focused. Now, when you call busy Boogie Cousins as your crisis management team, oh, here comes Boogie Cousins, you know you got problems. Then we lose the game. Then it goes over into the locker room, which is probably going to continue over to the team playing. The Steve Kerr incident in the locker room, it stopped right there. Draymond admitted that he made a mistake, fessed up. This right here, he didn't admit to it. So they had to suspend him. The reason why, that's a workplace, Nick. And you can't allow just anybody in the workplace just to say anything to people who work there.
See, it surprised the people that were in the locker room were surprised he got suspended. People thought he would get fined. He might get sat for the
game.
That's
what they were hoping.
Okay, well, but let me.
That's what they were hoping.
Do you think that if Kevin Durant this summer had signed a full extension, 4 years, they still would have suspended Draymond? Because I do not.
No, because Draymond wouldn't have said what he said then.
Everything happens the same. He calls him the B word.
You can't say it's going to happen that way because he's not going to talk about the pending free agency because we resolved that because I signed the extension.
Okay, instead of saying the pending free agency after calling him the B word, he says, man, we didn't need you. We won titles without you. Whatever, just as personal. Do you think they would have suspended him if they weren't worried about Durant leaving? Because I do not.
If you do anything that you wouldn't do to Steph, if you do anything you wouldn't say to Clay, if you do anything you wouldn't say to Iggy, if you say it to KD, you deserve to get suspended. Absolutely. Now, would he have said that to Steph? Oh, no. Would he have said that to Clay? Clay was sitting right there next to him, just being cool as can be. Would he have said that to Clay? No. KD deserves the same amount of respect, even though he wasn't drafted by the Warriors, all right? He deserves the same amount of respect. So when you're talking about, hey, when you talk to me, put some respect on my name, listen, let's play the game the right way. You get the rebound, we get ready to close it out. Who should you get the ball to?
But when you say play the game the right way, that the Warriors taking advantage of chaos and pushing the pace is the way they've played basketball for 4 years, see? Like, Steve Kerr saw it happening, and if he didn't like Draymond bringing the ball past half court, he'd call timeout and just drop a play for Kevin Durant.
Steve Kerr, Nick, has not always made the right decision in them game timeout situations because they're so talented.
Sure.
It's not like he's a master of the X's and O's, a master at closing it out.
Does any of this affect on-court play moving forward? And if not, does any of this matter?
Oh, it's going to matter because Draymond not going back down. I believe something's going to happen that even if they have to push, Golden State to move Draymond. I wouldn't be surprised at all if it continues to escalate and they tried to move Draymond.
And that was, listen, Marcus Thompson alluded to something similar and he covers the team. This is not a nothing. This is a big deal. And all of a sudden, I was just reading during the break, another article from the Mercury News, where the newspaper, I got the name wrong, but you guys, people know what I'm talking about. The another guy covering the team saying things have been bubbling. And now all of a sudden, the
between
people
these two.
Yes, but between the team and Durant. And that's why I am not just putting it on Draymond. Is Draymond might be the listen, Draymond's gotten in trouble calling LeBron the B word. Draymond is obviously fiery. I mentioned he almost fought the coach a few years ago. But the team as a whole has not appreciated that their attempt to win their third straight title has become the subplot to where Durant's going next year, and it bubbled over. Like, that's a real thing they're going to be dealing with all year long.
Yeah, y'all want to see a real thing? Y'all let somebody in the camera crew, somebody here at Fox, somebody walking down the street, y'all let somebody call me that five-letter word. Not once, but let them call me that twice. See when it's going to end. You see when it's going to end. When they either remove them from this place or I do something physically to them. That's what's going to happen.
So warning to all y'all.
Seriously, if we were thinking about doing that.
Yeah.
Coming up, are the Cowboys making a playoff push? That's next on First Things First. Yeah. Tomorrow, Aaron Rodgers and the Packers battle Russell Wilson and the Seahawks. It is a fierce NFC showdown. All starts at 7:30 Eastern on Fox, NFL Network, and streaming on Prime Video. It's this music that fires me up for these teases.
Great Thursday night football game this week.
Super excited.
Last week was supposed to be a great one. Panthers get blown out. This week should be a great one.
Canty, check out the pregame. 7:30, I'll be on there.
All right, I'm going to be locked in for that,
Join
CC.
Straight hand. I might wear one of the straight hand suits, straight hand collection.
Oh, look at him.
Plugging the Michael straight hand collection.
See how many I'll go through them.
Back here at First Things First, it's officially our favorite time of the week. Super Bowl champ Chris Canty is here.
Did you hear what Jenna said? Good to see you, Canty.
What?
You just said it's officially our favorite time of the week.
Yeah.
Literally, 1 hour and 22 minutes ago.
Yeah.
Read your script. Mark Schlereth sitting right there. Look who's here, Mark Schlereth. It's officially our favorite time of the week.
That didn't happen. That didn't happen. No, you are our favorite.
I didn't catch that when he was on the show.
Exactly, because it didn't happen.
Yeah, I'm just not going.
We love having you. Favorite guest. Love what you're wearing. Everything is good.
Can we run the two tapes side by side, please?
I don't know what.
Why are you trying to create controversy?
I'm just being honest.
Like what's going on in Golden State. Stop it. Stop being Draymond Green.
Let's talk some Cowboys. There's nothing controversial here. Hey, Canty, if we squint and we stretch and we allow ourselves to be completely open-minded, then the Dallas Cowboys are smack in the playoff picture. I mean, technically, their win Sunday night over the Eagles did put them at 4-5. They are tied with Philadelphia. They're not far behind Washington, who sits atop the division at 6-3. So who's going to win the NFC East? Well, Troy Aikman has a take that may surprise you.
Right now, if I had to pick somebody, I would I'd pick Dallas. The Thanksgiving game is huge. But I think that if Dallas can keep it within two games going into Thanksgiving and then win that game, I think they're positioned pretty well. The next week or so will be interesting to see what happens.
All right, Chris, so what do the Cowboys have to do if they want to win the NFC East?
Well, I agree with Troy Aikman. I think they've got to keep it at a two-game deficit between them and the Washington Redskins going into that Thanksgiving game, keeping in mind that the Washington Redskins already beat them in D.C. So they'll be set up with an opportunity to make some ground up on Thanksgiving, Washington having to travel on a short week because of Thanksgiving. But in looking at this Dallas Cowboys team and saying that they're probably one of the teams that you would look at and say they're the favorite to win the division, I think it's more so because of what's going on with the other teams and less about the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, the Philadelphia Eagles, I mean, they've shown that you can't trust them, especially when they're at home. I mean, Carson Wentz is playing at an otherworldly level, but their defense is making the opposing team's quarterback look like Carson Wentz. Yep. And that's the biggest issue with that. Their defense.
Lost Ronald Darby, it's not going to get better. They got one starter back, Malcolm Jenkins, and the rest of them are replacements.
You're absolutely right. And then you look at the Washington Redskins. I mean, Alex Smith has proven not to be an upgrade over Kirk Cousins. And with the injuries that they've got on the offensive line, Sean LaValle and Brandon Scherff both lost for the season. They lost another offensive lineman for the season down in Tampa. That offense hasn't been able to get on track. And we've seen that defense can be leaky. You saw it against the Atlanta Falcons. You saw it last week against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It just so happens that the Bucs were 0-5 in the red zone. Yep. And they only came up with 3 points in five trips. So, I mean, I don't trust the Washington Redskins either. So, yeah, and looking at where all of the teams in the NFC East are at right now, I'd have to say I probably trust the Dallas Cowboys the most to be able to win the division based on their formula for success, which is being able to run the football.
So I can't say I trust them the most. What I can say is they're alive. And why are they alive? They're alive because of everything you said about Washington. Mm-hmm. Washington does have six wins, but, man, they look like a team poised to knock themselves out due to injury. Not their fault. I don't blame them for the injuries. You mentioned lost both guards. Lost another offensive lineman, and Trent Williams still ain't healthy. Like, mm-hmm. So it is hard, and when their path to victory in Washington had been Adrian Peterson mm-hmm. running the football, yeah. that is a rough situation to be in. Also, Philly spent a lot of this week talking about what is wrong with the Eagles, as the coach knows what's wrong, what's wrong with the defense. Like, so the Cowboys, by default, are alive. But before I'm going to take the Cowboys seriously as a good team, can they beat a good team? The teams they've beaten this year are combined 12 and 24. They have beaten the best team they've beaten all year is Philly. Other than that, it's Jacksonville, Detroit, and the Giants. Can they win a road game other than last week against Philly? Like, there's the what's up?
Well, can Philly win a home game?
Sure.
I mean, mm-hmm. can we get to that part of it?
No, but in order for, but because Washington has the two-game lead, like, Washington doesn't have to play great. Mm. Washington already, like you said, Dallas isn't in the position Philly's in, where they get two left against Philly, mm-hmm. or against Washington, pardon me. They already played Washington once, and they lost once. They need to win on Thanksgiving just to get a split. I understand that their defense is great. Like, their defense, we were talking about this before the year, and it's played up to that level. Zeke is still Zeke. But the Cowboys also still have the limitations they have, I believe, coaching and quarterback-wise, and they're 4-5 without a signature win. I only take the Cowboys seriously because of the division they're in. Any other division in football, we are not discussing them as a playoff team.
About every other year, we have a division a lot like the NFC yep. East, where teams are struggling to be above 500. And I've been doing these shows for a long time, so we get posed these questions. Man, who do you trust the most? None of them. But what Dallas has done from an adjustment standpoint, that if they're going to rely on Ezekiel Elliott, if they, with Mark Colombo taking over the offensive line, if they're going to continue to combo block with their bigger guys in there and get up on those linebackers and run ball, if they're going to do those things, is their defense still going to continue to play the way they're playing? Those are the only things in this division that I can trust. I can't trust Alex Smith. I can't trust that depleted offensive line trying to open up holes for Adrian Peterson coming down the stretch. So who can I trust the most? And those two elements as far as Dallas, those are the only things that I can, if I had to extend some trust, that's the only things that I could extend it for.
Well, you feel that trust with the Dallas Cowboys formula because you know that that's going to have success in November mm-hmm. and going into December. So, I mean, those are the big things that you try to figure out about teams having an identity. Can they run the football? Can they play good defense? The Dallas Cowboys have check marks by both of those things.
You trust that inconsistent, that intermittent success that Dallas has had more than the Eagles figuring out what they did last year, getting Golden Tate up to speed into that offense? You trust the Cowboys more than the Eagles right now turning things around?
Oh, I got no trust for Doug Peterson. All right? Them press conferences, he needs to give them. We got Freddie that goes around. He's got them little cards. Mm-hmm. Shut up. Like, he needs to shut up. He needs to close your mouth. What does it say? What does Freddie say?
Stop talking.
Oh, stop that too. All three of them
things. Card that just says stop talking.
Those press conferences are demoralizing. If I was in the locker room as a player and I'm like, that's my coach. He's up there questioning what he's doing. Is he committed enough to doing it the right way?
But you have more faith in Jason Garrett, who's basically been on the firing block this whole season?
Jenna, I got more faith in what they're doing.
Okay.
Yes. Do I have more faith in on the field? Yeah, Doug Peterson, man, he's grabbing at stuff. Oh, we have more fun here. Oh, that's what he said 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Oh, we're going to get back to what we were doing. Oh, that's what he said.
But here's what I don't want. You're right that every couple years, when I was in Houston, the AFC South was that division, see? Mm-hmm. And fan bases tricked themselves into thinking being in contention, maybe even winning your division, means you're a good team. No, it does not. Right now in the NFC East, there was one good team, Washington. That team's been decimated by injuries. There is not, right now as we sit here heading into week 11, a good team in that division.
Yeah, I've been on teams like this. You fool them, you 9-7, 10-6. I'm still going to get boxes in December because I know we're not going to be able to make a playoff run. We might upset someone. Man, we scored like 18 points on the Giants in like 5 minutes to be able to beat them with Randall Cunningham. Next week went to San Francisco, got boat race touching down the field with Steve Young and them. Like, no, these teams aren't going to be able to make a serious run, but will they be in contention because of the division? Yeah. Yeah, get some boxes, though. Everyone in that division can get some boxes.
The right answer is the Dallas Cowboys.
Wow.
The right answer is the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, you might not like it.
After Atlanta beats them?
I don't know about that. You're talking about a team that just lost to Cleveland.
Okay.
Okay.
Cleveland might be as good as Dallas.
We're talking about Cleveland. They got 3 wins. Stop it.
Dallas got 4.
3 wins.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.